You should know there are still some bills in the Wisconsin state legislature that are bigger than all the partisan acrimony that seems to loom so large. This is your State Capitol Report on the Morning Show, and I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And for decades, Wisconsin suffered from chronic delays in processing evidence for sexual assaults. Wisconsin's Assembly and Senate, both Democrats and Republicans, are working on legislation to make sure this never happens again. So what questions do you have for a state senator who pushed to change the way Wisconsin handles evidence from sexual assault cases? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to join our conversation. Email always ideas@WPR.org. State Senator Melissa Aggard is a Democrat from Madison, serving her first term in the state Senate. She previously served four terms in the Assembly. State Senator, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's begin with the problem. I mean, for decades, Wisconsin had this problem of processing sexual assault evidence. What was behind it?
Well, this is, first of all, something that wasn't unique to Wisconsin, but certainly something that we in Wisconsin can all agree needed to be addressed. We didn't have procedures set place in our state on how it is to transmit and process and store sexual assault kits in our state. So there were sexual assault kits in police stations across the state of Wisconsin. There were sexual assault kits that weren't moving out of hospitals and clinics into the hands of people that would transport them across the state. And because of that, they weren't getting to the facilities that will test those sexual assault kits. And even once they were at the facilities that test those sexual assault kits for the DNA to try and figure out who the perpetrators were of these crimes, there weren't timelines set forth that those tests needed to occur in. And because of this, survivors and victims of sexual assault in the state of Wisconsin were continuing to be victimized because of the lack of systems.
Senator Aggard, you sponsored two bills to recently approved by the state legislature and now awaiting Governor Evers' signature, and it directly deals with this. Tell us what they would do.
So I have been for about 6 years working on two different policies to address this backlog of sexual assault kits in the state of Wisconsin. One of the bills would create procedures, just like I talked about, for the transmission, processing, storage, and testing of the sexual assault kits in the state of Wisconsin. There are timeframes that are set forth, and it also provides parameters on who it is responsible for the different steps of this process. The second bill provides a database so that survivors and victims of sexual assault in the state of Wisconsin would be able to access information about the status of their sexual assault kits in the state of Wisconsin, so that they would know where those kits are, and provide some as much support and compassion to people who have faced these very egregious and terrible crimes that we can in our state.
State Senator Melissa Aggard, our guest, and your calls at 1-800-642-1234 are welcome this morning for our state capitol report. So as the Wisconsin State Journal pointed out in their article, we had more than 4,000 sexual assault kits dating back to the 1980s that were left untested. And as you detail, this is something you've been working on for 6 years, going back to your time in the state assembly. Just tell us a little bit about that six-year experience and how much of a struggle it was to get this state legislature to approve of these two bills to make sure that this backlog of sexual assault kits never happens again, Senator.
Well, these bills, you know, as I said, there has been a national highlight pointed on the lack of systems and procedures for the testing and the processing and the storage of sexual assault kits. And here in Wisconsin, when we realized what those numbers were, it was really clear to me that we needed to do everything possible in order to create procedures to uphold the dignity of survivors of sexual assault and sexual violence in the state of Wisconsin. So I was proud to be able to originally start working with Attorney General Brad Schimmel, who is a Republican, as well as Republican colleagues in the legislature, in coming up with the ideas of these policies and original drafting. And it's been a long haul. But I've been able to additionally work with Attorney General Call in getting these bills across the finish line with his office, as well as with Senator Rob Coles and Senator Alberta Darling. And it is really clear that these bills show that our legislature is actually capable of so much more than partisan bickering. And I am hopeful that with the passing of these long overdue bills that we can actually focus on solving the problems that exist in our state and provide this dignity and support for people in Wisconsin.
Senate Bill 94 and Senate Bill 71, they've both been approved by both houses of the legislature. So where do they stand this morning, Senator?
So both of these bills did pass the Senate very early in the session, and that is no small feat to get them through committee and then onto the Senate floor. And they were bipartisan, unanimous votes in the Senate. And very recently, they did pass through the state assembly as well. Unanimously, bipartisanly supported on the floor of the assembly. And they have moved on to the governor. I believe very strongly that Governor Evers will be signing these bills and providing the victims of these heinous crimes some additional dignity, as well as providing folks, whether it's our SANES nurses in the hospitals or the advocates that work directly with sexual assault victims in the state of Wisconsin, or law enforcement agencies, or the folks at the state hygiene lab that do the testing, with these parameters and guidelines so that we can ensure that Wisconsin is more just when it comes to crimes of sex.
Melissa Aggard is a Democratic senator representing Madison District. And Senator, let's talk about the victim notification process. Now, according to the Department of Justice, of more than 1,700 cases where DNA from sexual assault tests were identified, authorities attempted to notify 140 survivors. 1,700 cases, 140 survivors. What's the discrepancy between those numbers? Why isn't more being done to keep survivors in the loop on these cases?
Well, certainly we know that there are some survivors that choose not to think about or to engage in the crimes that occurred, and they may not want to be found. There are other people that move. We live in a very mobile society, so that gets a little bit challenging as well. And we know very much that putting a tool in the hands of people who are the survivors of sexual assault and sexual violence allows them the ability to track their sexual assault kits and know the status of them. But most of all, we also know that many of the perpetrators of these crimes are repeat offenders. So every time the State Lab of Hygiene and the Department of Justice is able to make a positive match on one of these sex kits that has been in the backlog, or even a new one that may enter into the system, we do know that we are also preventing very likely future sexual assaults and sex crimes from occurring.
Do we know how many convictions have come from clearing the backlog of these sexual assault kits, Senator?
I don't have that number with me, but I do know that it is not unique for me to turn on the news and hear of another case that has been solved because of addressing this backlog. We do know that it is vitally important to uphold the survivor's dignity and make sure that we are holding folks accountable for these very egregious and harmful crimes, and additionally protecting people who are potential victims in the future by getting these folks off the street and making sure that they enter into the justice system.
6 years of your work, bipartisan support to get these two bills to the governor's desk, now waiting to be signed. What took so long? What is it about the political process in Madison, Senator Aggard, that makes something that is bipartisan with support take 6 years to cross to the governor's desk?
Well, it is very frustrating to think that it did take 6 years for these bills to be able to pass. But I also know that because of the bipartisan work and because of the grit and determination of survivors, as well as legislators and folks in the Department of Justice, and advocates across the state of Wisconsin that we are crossing the finish line with very strong, comprehensive policies that will support people across the state of Wisconsin and ensure that we don't find ourselves in the situation again. It is not unique to talk about the challenges in the legislature because of partisan gridlock, but we can absolutely do better, and this is a strong example of that.
State Senator Melissa Aggard, our guest for your State Capitol Report this morning. Your calls welcome at 1-800-642-1234. Two bills now on the governor's desk with bipartisan support. SB 94, Senate Bill 94, tracking sexual assault kits, and Senate Bill 71 will codify the procedures for those kits. What do you want to know from the state senator from Madison? 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. It's the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and I'm Lee Rayburn. Our guest this morning, State Senator Melissa Aggard. We've been talking about the two bills that have made it to the governor's desk with bipartisan support this morning to deal with the previous backlog of sexual assault kits, how we track those sexual assault kits, how we keep victims notified, and how we codify procedures for those kits so the backlog never happens again. How does legislation get passed in Madison, and what do you need to know about something with bipartisan support taking as long as 6 years to get signed by the governor? 1-800-642-1234 is a number to join the show. Email ideas at WPR.org. Senator Melissa Aggard stays with us, and John from Eau Claire has a question this morning. John, good morning. You're on with Senator Melissa Aggard.
Good morning. I'd like to commend the senator for her efforts in this regard. It is very, very important. One thing I've observed over many decades on this subject is that the punishment for forcible rape has gradually declined, and I cannot understand that. Forcible rape used to be a very serious crime. It now carries a sentence that doesn't seem to be any more than a simple pornography charge, and I'd like her comments on that.
I am not aware of this, John. Senator Aggard?
So, John, I appreciate your kind words. It is clear that we absolutely have more work that we need to be doing in Wisconsin to lift up the trauma that sexual assault victims have experienced in order for them to move into the category of survivors. There are too many people that have experienced this reality in our state. And we do know that folks in Wisconsin and our survivors of sexual violence absolutely deserve more than what it is that currently occurs in the state of Wisconsin. So I do have a long list of other policies that I am looking at. I am working with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, as well as the Attorney General's office. And I think it is wonderful when we can come together and agree on what it is that we need to solve for people in our communities.
Senator Aggard, Bob from Madison called, had to run, but would want to know if you think that a national DNA database could contribute to the eliminating the lag of sexual assault cases.
Well, that is a very good question. And certainly, I think that having a national database is something that we should be looking at, because we do live in a highly mobile society. However, it is important that we also know that we have systems set up in the state of Wisconsin for our state departments and the folks within our communities that work frontline with the survivors of sexual assault and sexual violence. So these bills are very important. And also, let's look at the national policies as well.
Senator Aggard, taking a look at some of the other initiatives that you are spearheading, it is at this point you could safely say that Wisconsin is a weed desert. Our state is surrounded by others that allow for some form of legalized adult consumption of marijuana. Not here, not yet anyway, but you have long been a proponent of some form of legalizing marijuana. I saw you traveled south of the border to Illinois to give a press conference in front of one of their dispensaries there. You introduced a bill in September that would allow people 21 and older to possess up to 2 ounces of marijuana. How does this bill address concerns that Republicans have raised in past sessions about legalization?
Well, we know that the most dangerous thing about cannabis in Wisconsin is that it is illegal, and that Wisconsin is an island of prohibition at this point. It is really important that we look at pragmatic, common sense solutions that do not exist because of that prohibition of cannabis. So many of the things that we hear from folks about legalization are in fact myths, and it's vitally important that we move forward with factual information. And it is past time that we legalize cannabis in Wisconsin for responsible adult usage and have a path towards medicinal access as well.
But it's worth asking, does prohibition create prevention? Are we able to, as some of the concerns have been raised, limit the Schedule I narcotic in the state of Wisconsin by prohibiting its legal use here?
Well, certainly you mentioned the schedule of cannabis, and I think it's past time that we have that rescheduled at the federal level. But there are many states across our great nation that have moved forward with full legalization of cannabis. And in fact, in Wisconsin, it is a very successful industry. It is, in fact, an illicit industry in the state of Wisconsin. We're not introducing something new with the idea of legalizing cannabis in our state. What we are doing by legalizing cannabis in Wisconsin, if this bill were to pass, is we're addressing egregious racial disparities. We're supporting our agricultural heritage and our farmers. We're supporting our main streets and our small businesses, our entrepreneurs, and we are providing an additional amount of revenue into our state of Wisconsin through taxes and fees and licenses, as well as taking some pressure off of our law enforcement agencies to focus on things like rape, sexual assault, gun violence, and the opioid epidemic.
Our guest, Melissa Agar, Democratic Senator representing the Madison District, joining us, and be interested to hear from you before our time's up here at 7:30. What are your thoughts on marijuana legalization? 1-800-642-1234. Should Wisconsin join other states in ending the prohibition of it? And if so, how? Because, Senator Agar, there's another proposal that would decriminalize possession of less than 10 grams of weed. Is that something you'd support?
I believe that the way that we move Wisconsin forward is through fully legalizing cannabis for responsible adult usage, and that's frankly where I'm going to be spending my time and energy. Decriminalization does not address all the issues that cannabis prohibition casts across our communities. So it is vitally important that the bill that I have drafted, which provides paths to expungement, reinvests in communities most harmed by cannabis prohibition and over-policing, supports our farmers and supports our main streets, is the one that I am going to be focusing on, and frankly, that the majority of the people of the state of Wisconsin are also in support of.
Is there bipartisan support here? And if so, are there special interests in Wisconsin that have a vested interest in keeping marijuana prohibited?
So I know that there is certainly bipartisan support everywhere, but in the Capitol building, on the full legalization of cannabis in Wisconsin. And in fact, I do have Republican colleagues that said if I could get this bill to committee or to the floor that they would vote for it. So that defines bipartisan support to me, though they have not put their name on the line and signed on. So I do encourage listeners to reach out to their elected officials and share their ideas on what we should be doing as a state when it comes to legalization of cannabis in Wisconsin. We know that we are ready for this, that communities that are most affected by cannabis prohibition will benefit from it, and that the bottom is not dropping out in states that have legalized. It's past time for Wisconsin to take these steps.
Senator Agard, we are still in a pandemic and cases are beginning to climb again. What do you think, if anything, we should be doing to fight this pandemic today?
My request for people is to believe in the science that is out there, to realize that we do have very effective, very safe vaccines available. We seem to be stuck at a level of vaccination in the state of Wisconsin, unfortunately. And I encourage people to go out and get those vaccines to save your own lives and wear masks to save the lives of those people that are around you.
Is there something more that the state legislature or the state government could be doing?
Well, certainly it was very disappointing to me when my Republican colleagues took the power away from the governor and the Department of Health Services to be able to take more actions here in the state of Wisconsin to keep people safe from this global pandemic. But at this point, what we need to do is realize that here in Wisconsin, we have a strong heritage of caring about one another and lifting each other up. And let's bring that back. Let's be compassionate. Let's get our vaccines, and let's make sure that we're taking care of the most vulnerable people in our communities.
Senator Aagaard, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Senator Melissa Aagaard, Democrat from Madison, serving her first term in the state assembly after previously serving four terms in the assembly. Did I say state assembly? State Senate. She previously served four terms in the assembly. Up next is news. Then the state capitol report continues with State Representative Robin Vining, who has a proposal to eliminate the state's personal property tax. What do you think about that? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to the Capitol Report on The Morning Show. So Wisconsin's personal property tax was implemented in the 1830s, before Wisconsin was even a state, before income taxes and sales taxes. It's the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn for Kate Archer Kent. And it was the brand new property tax that funded the territorial government back in the day. But what's the case for keeping the personal property tax around today? A Republican proposal to eliminate the tax was vetoed by Governor Evers in July, while a Democratic proposal now awaits action in both Senate and Assembly committees. Weigh the pros and cons of getting rid of Wisconsin's personal property tax, and you tell me if it sounds like a good idea this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Our email is ideas@WPR.org. Our guest is Robin Vining, a Democrat representing the 14th Assembly District. Now, that district includes part of the cities of Brookfield and Wauwatosa. Representative Vining, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me. And I also represent the city of Milwaukee.
And thank you for that. So the city of Milwaukee, cities of Brookfield and Wauwatosa, and a proposal to eliminate the personal property tax. Why would we want to do that?
Well, so Lee, the intro is interesting. I don't think it's a question of whether or not we should eliminate it. It's more a question of how we get it done. We've got to get it done. So, yeah.
So we have to get it done on behalf of whom? Who is paying the price for these property taxes?
Well, small businesses, and absolutely small businesses. But if we don't do it the right way, then local municipalities and local taxpayers.
So there was a proposal, as mentioned, that was vetoed by the governor earlier this summer, a Republican proposal to eliminate the personal property tax. From where you saw it, Representative Vining, why did the governor veto that proposal?
Well, I will never forget sitting on the floor that day and watching as Representative Hesselbein and others were working really hard to finish the negotiations so that we could get it across the finish line. I think in that room there was a group effort, a shared opinion that we needed to get it done. And it was incredibly frustrating watching all of us in that room know what we needed to do to get it done and just not finishing the job. So the negotiation stalled and I just wasn't satisfied with that. I said, we have to bring it back. So, yeah.
So why
when you... Go ahead.
I'm curious to know then, with the proposal vetoed this summer by the governor, why is the current proposal, your proposal, better than the Republican version?
Well, so our proposal is very detailed. It's about a 50-page bill, and we solved the problem. So one of the things that we looked at was what the other proposal would do to some of our municipalities. And we wanted to make sure that local municipalities were not penalized by the bill. So we fixed that.
What measure would the bill take to support local governments in the absence of the revenue of personal property taxes?
What measure would it take? For example, like the city of Superior, Representative Milroy brought to us a significant concern about what was happening in the city of of Superior under that, under the way the Republicans wrote the bill. And it would have cost them lots of money. So what we did was we closed that problem.
And our guest, Robin Vining, Democrat representing the 14th Assembly District, elected to the Assembly in 2018 with a proposal to eliminate the personal property tax, to which you may have some questions this morning. What do you know about Wisconsin's personal property taxes? Are you in favor of removing them? 1-800-642-1234. Often heard that property taxes can pit public education against people on a fixed income, homeowners who have retired, and this seems to be an unfair funding model. So tell me a little bit about public schools and funding without a personal property tax, Representative Vining.
I'm sorry.
Personal property taxes, if we were to eliminate them, where would school funding, public school district funding come from? What are we looking at for funding models without a personal property tax? What would take its place?
Without a personal property tax?
Mm-hmm.
So, So what we talk about when we talk about the personal property tax is like the comprehensive issue. The way we wrote the bill is to make sure that this affects cities in different ways, different cities in different ways. And if you, each local government is going to be somewhat different depending on the city. So we make sure that if a city is hurt in this process, that they're taken care of.
Okay, Robin Vining joining us this morning, and with a proposal to eliminate personal property taxes, that would seem to, at least on the face of it, create a hole in the state budget that would seem to be, or a hole in municipal budgets that would need to be filled at least from state revenue or somewhere else. If we're not paying personal property taxes, it's just a matter of state revenue. Then where does that tax revenue come from if it's not property?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a little confused by your question.
I was just wondering, if we eliminate the personal property tax, and the concern was from the vetoed bill that the governor vetoed earlier this summer, that it could blow holes in municipal budgets or create struggles for budgeting for municipalities. How does your elimination of that personal property tax fill those holes? Is there another revenue stream that comes in? Will taxes be increased somewhere else? If that needed to be filled in order for the governor to sign the elimination of a purple personal property tax, how does that get filled?
Well, we wrote a very complicated budget in partnership with the DOR, and it's about 50 pages long. So my understanding is that we are going to talk about that briefly today. We are also going to talk about the Pregnancy Protection Act and universal changing stations and redistricting. So
absolutely.
Wasn't my understanding that we are going to be in the weeds on the.
I apologize. Let's get to a question here and then we can move on. Chris in Milwaukee joins us this morning with an alternative point of view. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. I've said it before, actually, on public radio. I think more things should be on the property tax. I always said put schools on income tax and military on property tax, but I'm willing to put everything on the property tax because you can see where your money is going. Put it right on your bill. And then if you really have a problem with schools, imagine what kind of a problem you're going to have with F-35s. Thank you.
So increasing a personal property tax is an entirely different perspective, the argument there would be that, at least from Chris, is that we would have the bill right there. We would have what we owe, as opposed to sales tax, income tax, property tax, and having to add that all, cobble that all together. And where does this proposal now stand in the Assembly and Senate, Representative Vining?
Sure. So the proposal right now is in committee and is waiting for a hearing.
All right. right. So also want to get your reaction as you represent areas of Brookfield, Wauwatosa, and the city of Milwaukee in the tragedy in Waukesha, and more than 60 people injured, six died. Should lawmakers be looking at new safety requirements for parades or for law enforcement or for recidivism? What was your reaction to the tragedy in Waukesha, Robin?
Oh, absolutely. I'm just absolutely heartbroken.
Yeah.
Just absolutely heartbroken. There aren't words for just how tremendously sad this is. And I'm the trauma that so many families experienced, so many children, the loss of life. I'm just desperately sad.
And also get your reaction to the jury finding Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on all counts of homicide and reckless endangerment charges, a case that received national attention, put Wisconsin in the spotlight, southeastern Wisconsin. Do you see a need for changing Wisconsin's laws around self-defense, guns, or how the courts handle homicide cases, Representative Vining?
Well, those are all conversations that are going to happen, I think, in the months and the way the law works, years to come. And right now, this is a week ago and Friday, and there was tremendous grief in our communities. And on Sunday, we experienced the tragedy in Waukesha and more grief. And I think right now, families and Wisconsinites are feeling a heavy, heavy weight, asking a lot of questions, and I hope lawmakers are doing the same.
Robin Vining, Democrat representing the 14th Assembly District, first elected to the Assembly in 2018, answering your questions this morning for our State Capitol Report at 1-800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org. Now, as you mentioned, Representative Vining, you introduced a bill that would install adult-sized changing stations in certain public buildings. Tell us a little bit about what is behind this bill, what led you to introduce this bill, and why you are hoping it makes it to the governor's desk.
The Universal Changing Stations Bill is a bill I'm really excited about. It's inspired by a mom in Brookfield. Her name is Sarah and her son's name is Matthew. And they came to me at one of my very first office hours back in 2019 and had been working really hard to try and get the attention of the state to help us understand that when the buildings aren't outfitted for the people don't go to the buildings. And so we have this population of people who need these universal changing stations so that they can go and be places and enjoy Wisconsin. And so we are trying to make Wisconsin more accessible, or we say to operate for everybody. And so we wrote this bill, and it is bipartisan. I am happy to announce that we are bipartisan on this bill again this cycle. And it talks about how putting adjustable changing stations in large buildings, so like large capacity buildings with lots of traffic each day, is important to the Wisconsin way of life. And so we are really excited about this bill. People are excited about this bill. We get a lot of feedback about this bill, and it's very exciting.
Has there been any blowback from businesses about whether or not it would be another cost for them?
So Lee, I did something in Wisconsin that I don't know if it's been done around the country, but we kicked in a tax cut for our small businesses if they elect to put these in their buildings. But otherwise, we're talking about like large scale buildings. So tens of thousands of feet, like 3,000 people going through each day. So we're talking about, you know, large places like the Milwaukee Public Museum or Summerfest, large spaces, Discovery World, the airport. Those are the kinds of sizes of buildings that we're talking about.
And then for small businesses who choose a adult size changing station, they would be offered tax credits to do so?
We have a tax credit in there. Yes, we do.
Robin Vining, Democrat representing the 14th Assembly District, our guest for the State Capitol Report at 1-800-642-1234, answering your questions when we continue. I'm Lee Rayburn. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Baby bonds? It's the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is the author of a bill that would provide $3,000 bonds for babies born to Medicaid-eligible families. Just doing the math, how many weeks of child care would that pay for? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to join the conversation. Email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest, State Representative Robin Vining, Democrat representing the 14th Assembly District. And Representative Vining, so a little bit about these baby bonds. You're the co-author of the baby bonds bill. If the bill's approved, the state would invest in bonds worth $3,000. We've talked about 529 programs on our show. There are other state-sponsored investment accounts that you can contribute to and put towards a child's education expense. So why set aside a baby bond program instead of, say, a 529 program?
Well, so I just want to give credit to Senator Agard. She is the architect of this bill. She is a brilliant colleague of mine, and I absolutely adore working with her. Senator Agard designed this bill, and the reason is because we can help break the cycle of generational poverty and reduce the impacts of income inequality for the people of Wisconsin. And this is a way that we've seen that that can do that.
Wisconsin Department of Health Services and the 2018 Wisconsin Maternal Mortality Review found that in Wisconsin, black mothers are five times more likely than their white counterparts to die during or within a year of pregnancy. Black infants' risk of death is double the state average. So how can we institutionally attack that problem, Representative Vining?
So our maternal mortality rates, our maternal health, our infant mortality rates, our infant health deserve our attention right now in Wisconsin. You are correct. And I wanna highlight my colleagues. So Representative Sheila Stubbs and Senator LaTanya Johnson, their work on the Wisconsin Birth Equity Act is really important work. It's a package of six bills that address maternal and infant health disparities. And it would be a really great show. I hope you guys can have them on at some point to talk about these bills, because infant and maternal health and the racial disparities in healthcare in Wisconsin deserve our attention right now. And then in addition to that, I have worked on a bill. We introduced it last session and we just reintroduced it in Wisconsin again this session with Senator LaTanya Johnson and Rep. Sheila Stubbs. We introduced the Pregnancy Protection Act again recently, and that is ensuring healthcare coverage for maternity and newborn care. And because we know that we have significant work to do to improve maternal health care in Wisconsin, we're on the beat. So what this does is it puts into state law that maternity and newborn care are essential health benefits, and individual and small group health insurance plans must cover them. And that is important because we can, prenatal and postnatal healthcare can identify and treat complications of pregnancy, such as preeclampsia and gestational diabetes, ectopic pregnancies, postpartum depression, infection, other potentially life-threatening complications for the mother and the child. So we think it is really important that every woman and child in Wisconsin have access to quality, affordable healthcare.
Let's go to John in Three Lakes this morning, who has a question for our guest for this week's State Capitol Report, State Representative Robin Vining. Good morning, John.
Hey, I commend you for the diaper changing stations. Also a father. I got to say, as a concerned father, I'm a little worried about these felons getting out on really light sentences. For instance, the Waukesha parade attacker, or whatever you want to call him. And also the gentleman who got shot in the Kenosha situation, because they were both out on, they were both felons and not supposed to be out doing what they were supposed to be doing. And we have heard absolutely zero from the media, and I haven't heard much from this station. I haven't heard you address that situation. So I'd like to see or hear what you're going to do about these dangerous felons that keep getting released.
John, thank you. There has been questions in the past about incarceration rates in Wisconsin. There have been questions about overcrowding in prisons, Wisconsin. And now there are questions about repeat offenders and what we are doing with bail in Wisconsin. Representative Vining?
So first of all, I want to give credit for the baby changing stations to Representative Brostoff, the bill that you referenced. Thank you for that. Congratulations on your child. Mine is the universal changing station is an adult size changing station. So I just want to make sure that we clarify that and give credit to Rep. Brostoff for the baby changing bill. And then I want to expand the conversation. We need to talk about domestic violence charges, and that we know that domestic violence can often be a signal. Like we often see domestic violence before we see mass casualty events. So as we have these conversations moving forward, let's have them. Let's have the conversations. And I would invite you, as you're concerned, as a concerned citizen, we have listening sessions. The governor had one specifically on criminal justice reform as we were writing the state budget last year. So get in those conversations. We're making them very accessible. Contact your legislator, ask them what bills are up or what that are in committee that you might be interested in. Make sure you get your voice heard and be part of those conversations moving forward. So thank you for reaching out.
And I want to apologize to you, State Representative Vining. The personal property tax doesn't fund schools. That was my mistake. I was thinking of property taxes. And I want to make sure I get that on the air, that your repeal of the personal property tax is a tax on equipment and materials from small businesses. And the funding was included in the state budget. So it's bought and paid for. It's just a matter of how we're going to do it. So let's return to that question
for a moment.
I am so glad that you corrected me, Representative Vining. And I apologize to you. But the bigger picture here is how legislation.
Monday morning after Thanksgiving. We'll give you a little room.
Oh, my gosh. That's what I was thinking. I just didn't want to say it out loud. But we've got a couple minutes here to talk about how the sausage gets made in Madison and how you get something across the finish line with the partisan acrimony. And Representative Vining, you're on the front line. So as we're asking, you know, why is there bipartisan support but nothing getting done? What's the answer to that question?
Oh, you think I have the answer to that question?
I'm hoping you've got some insight.
I think that the expectation from the public is that we would get things done. I think that would be a fair expectation of the public. It's one of the reasons that I authored the personal property tax in the first place. It's normal. We're going to have varying opinions in Madison. We're going to have disagreements, but we cannot allow our disagreements to be the reason that important legislation does not get signed into law. So I think there needs to be a commitment from the legislature to figure out not if we're going to work together, but how we're going to work together.
Representative Vining, appreciate your time and your grace this morning. Thank you as always.
You are welcome. Happy Monday.
Indeed. Robin Vining, Democrat representing the 14th Assembly District. It includes parts of Brookfield, Wauwatosa, and Milwaukee. Just ahead, what it's like to be a chef without having a sense of taste or smell. We talk with one of Wisconsin's foodies who's navigating cooking through COVID-19. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. This has been your State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.